The others did as well. I weaved my arms over a rung, clutched my wrists, and almost slumped in exhaustion. The Tosk below me peered up, no doubt checking on Baran. The werewolf-like creature did not seem to be the least bit tired. After a few minutes, the rung began to dig into my arms. I straightened.
"Are you rested?" Baran asked.
"I have an observation to make," I told him. "We're never going to cart the chronowarp up this hole."
"That seems like an elementary deduction," Baran said.
"So what's the point of this descent anyway?"
"We shall see once we get there. Are you ready?"
"I guess so." Baran gave the command and the descent continued. It had gotten hotter the farther we went down. If you've ever been in a cave, you would have noticed how much cooler it was inside than outside. The same didn't hold for a deep, deep hole. After a time, the hole got hotter. In the deepest mines, heat management was as much a problem as was drinking water and having enough air to breathe.
"How deep is this?" I panted. "We seem to be coming to a junction."
"You mean the bottom, right?"
"No, I mean a junction."
"What's that?" I asked.
"We're about to find out."
I looked down and saw the Tosk directly below me lean to the right and step onto what looked like a landing. I descended a few more rungs and did likewise. The Tosks crouched like primitives or lay on the floor. By the helmet lamps, it seemed the junction, as Baran had called it, was a low area surrounding the hole and ladder. I couldn't walk completely upright here, but had to bend my head. I practically collapsed to sit against a wall, glad to give my hands and feet a break. Baran had to bend over to move in here. He sat near me, but did not lean against a wall. Instead, he sat with his back straight, exuding energy. I remembered some of the super glands he'd boasted about earlier. I guess they worked. Of course, he'd just been floating, not climbing down a ladder like the rest of us.
"I am reassessing the situation," Baran told me.
"We aren't heading to a secret storage unit?" I asked.
"Precisely," he said.
"I suspect we both thought of it as an access way comparable to a basement in a house or possibly a vault in a bank. I no longer believe that."
"You don't believe the chronowarp is down here?" I asked.
"As to that, I cannot say. We shall continue soon."
"Why the rest, then?" I asked. He didn't answer. Instead, as he had on other occasions, Baran froze. The Tosks grew agitated, just like last time. I studied the Dominee. He stood as if he were chiseled out of marble. He did not breathe. He did not exude. I leaned toward him and reached out. The nearest Tosk snarled at me in warning. I looked at the huge creature. His fur was standing on end, and his exposed fangs looked bigger than ever. I felt as if the Tosk barely restrained himself from biting me, and that if I actually touched Baran, he and the other Tosks would rend me to pieces like lions did to a captured zebra. Instead of using this time to gain their freedom, the Tosks became increasingly protective of their tormentor. I shrugged, collapsing back against the wall. 2 minutes and 47 seconds later, and yes, I timed it, Baran breathed once more. At that point, the Tosks relaxed. "What are you doing when you freeze like a statue?" I asked. Baran climbed quickly to his feet.
"It is time to move."
"Is something wrong?" I asked. A fierce energy in his eyes that had been hooded for a time now radiated intensely.
"I believe we are about to discover a truth, a new truth."
"Why?"
"I have sensed..."
"Go," he said.
"I must know if my readings are correct or not. This time we are climbing down until we reach the bottom."
Chapter 33. We assumed the same order as before. 10 Tosks, me, Baran, and the last 2 Tosks bringing up the rear. The rest at the junction had helped me a little, but all too soon the front bottom part of my feet began to throb again, and my hands went from aching to numb. I kept moving. I wasn't going to let the Tosks out-hustle me. After a time, I began to hear a thudding sound from below. It was low, steady, and finally became rhythmic. The farther down we went, the louder the throb became. "Do you know what that is?" I asked Baran.
"I have several theories."
I moved down several more rungs before asking, "Care to share your theories?"
"It is possible we are descending into a world hive."
"What?" I asked. "You mean like giant ants or bees?"
"That is a strange order of creatures that have taken themselves beyond galactic law. They maneuver between the stars in steel worlds.
What's that supposed to mean? I asked, interrupting. Are you talking about giant spaceships?
If you'll cease your prattle long enough, I will explain.
I should have bristled at his words and tone. The steady throbbing sounds emanating from the guts of the earth had shaken me, though. I did not like the sounds. They struck me as ominous, most likely alien and detrimental to human life. Orion continued his lecture.
The Harkers, the name of the insect-like beings maneuvering in the steel worlds, have never acknowledged the authority of the Galactic Guard. That is for good reason. The Harkers devour worlds. They send teams of soldiers and a queen deep into a targeted world. There they build a hive, small at first and then expanding it into a giant construct hidden in the depths of the planet. In time, the Harkers begin to send squads onto the surface, kidnapping the aboriginals. The aboriginals become workers in some cases and food in others.
Whoa, food? We're heading into a hive where the aliens think we're food? Baran ignored the interruption.
The Harkers continue to build, continue to feed, until the world hive has encompassed everything on the planet. At that point, the place is a husk, used up. At that point, the Harkers launch new steel worlds to travel to other worlds, to begin the consumption process anew.
Let me ask this again. You think that's what we're descending toward?
That is one possibility, certainly, Baran said.
I peered down the ladder past the task below me. The throbbing, the steady rhythmic sound coming up unnerved me even more now than before. I imagined it as the droning of a million alien insects. We should head back up and alert Earth's militaries, I said.
No, we will descend to the bottom.
And if we land inside a Harka hive? I nearly shouted.
I deem that as doubtful.
But you just said...
I am logical, Logan. I consider all possibilities, giving each a weight as I amass more data. Surely it has become obvious to you that I am the greatest dominee of the Antares Institute. Thus, I do not emotionalize about a subject. It is one of the sources of my strength.
Just so we're straight, I said. You don't really believe we're headed down into an alien hive?
I have deemed that to be of low probability.
Why bother telling me about the Harkas, then?
Perhaps because I am disinclined to present the greatest possibility, Baran said. It is too breathtaking. Too unbelievable to consider yet.
You've obviously already considered it.
You must save your breath, Baran said. We still have a long way to travel.
He proved right about that. I descended farther into the earth via the steel ladder. The throbbing sound gained a clanging tone after a time. That clanging grew louder and more persistent. It shook me, shook the ladder, and made the descent harder than I would have imagined. It became difficult to grip the throbbing rungs, and it was even harder to keep my feet from sliding off the vibrating steps. Is there another junction? I shouted up at Baran. I'm beat. He glowed again with that blue nimbus of his. It told me he feared this place as much as I did. He did not bother to answer, however. I didn't have much choice but to keep descending. I'll say this for the Tusks. They were troopers. The sounds and the fact that the hole's mysterious nature seemed to have no effect upon them. They had been nervous earlier at the hatch, but they weren't agitated anymore, at least not visibly so. At last, the throbbing, clanging sounds became ponderous and nearly deafening. We could no longer communicate even by shouting at each other, because no one could have heard anyone else. At that point, I nearly lost it as a breeze suddenly blew against me. One moment, I was in the narrow steel tube. The next, I was descending the ladder surrounded by black emptiness. The Tusk helmet lamp speared back and forth in various directions, alighting upon nothing but more emptiness. No walls in sight. Despite my exhaustion, I envisioned what that meant. The breeze continued to blow against me. The lamps showed nothing. That meant I was descending a ladder into what had to be a gargantuan cavern. The sounds of the throbbing, clanking machine grew stronger. It was definitely closer to us. We minuscule creatures descended the ladder until a hellish red glow showed dark machines moving giant pistons back and forth. These pistons moved horizontally as if on a city-sized steam engine out of the American Old West. The hellish glow also showed me ground or rock. We'd almost reached the end of the hateful ladder into the guts of the earth. Chapter 34. The last 200 yards down almost proved my undoing. I slipped, crashing against the head of the Tusk below me. I began sliding off him. The werewolf-like creature used one of his long arms, clutching me lest I drop the rest of the way. By working together with him, I managed to re-grip the ladder. Shaken, and given an extra boost of adrenaline-induced strength due to the fear of falling, I made the rest of the descent until I stood with wobbly legs on solid ground. The giant machine, if that's what it was, seemed to go on forever in many directions. We hadn't come down at an end, but inside a maze of giant dark blocks of colossal machinery. These blocks seemed to be the size of literal city blocks, vast cubes of machinery shoved together into a bewildering hole. It was unnerving, frightening. Who had built this monstrosity? Why had they used what seemed like such crude technology? What fed power into these engines? How long had they been running like this? I did not like the idea of these machines having been running for centuries, maybe for endless millennia down here. Baran allowed us to lie on the trembling, rocky ground. He did not land, but remained hovering a few inches from the surface. Perhaps 20 minutes later, Baran's foot prodded my shoulder. I raised a groggy head, only realizing then that I'd fallen asleep. I was reluctant to move. My muscles ached, but I climbed to my feet. So did the Tusks. They kept the helmet lamps on and aimed the beam carbines in all directions. Baran still floated and held on to his baton. He looked everywhere, and I wondered what his extra senses or energies were telling him. For a time, we marched beside the giant machines. I did not know if they were separate machines or all of one piece. It was like walking through a gargantuan processing plant that was running at full tilt. Huge pistons made an incredible din while rocker arms churned furiously. I finally understood what Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk had felt like in the giant's castle in the clouds. I felt like a mouse. I kept expecting a giant cat to show up and devour us. The underground machinery did not feel like a Polarian thing. It seemed more elementary, older, and more sinister. If Polarians would have built such a thing, it would have gleamed like shiny silver, would have run soundlessly. In time, the throbbing, clanking, thrumming sounds dwindled as we left the machine area. The sounds did not fade away altogether, but it became possible to shout to each other. Finally, thankfully, a floating Baran led us into a quieter cavern. It no longer felt as if the very air vibrated my body. "I'm sick and tired," I said. "When do we stop?" There wasn't much to see beyond the circle of helmet lamp light. The rocky ground had wet patches here, and once a drip dropped on my head. Come to think of it, the air was damp and smelled like water. Baran alighted onto the damp, rocky floor. He motioned us toward a slick granite wall. The Tusks seemed to understand what he meant. 10 of them crouched or lay down. Those that did lie down closed their eyes and began to snore. The last 2 Tusks, my former guardians, stood guard. They tracked their heads so the helmet lamps kept moving into the darkness as they held their carbines at port arms. I leaned against a damp wall, accepting a bar of some kind from Baran. He'd turned off the Blue Nimbus some time ago. I wondered how much energy it took to keep that force field running, and where did Baran get the energy? The only logical place was from somewhere inside him. I guess the modifications must have included an implanted power source. The bar tasted like almonds. It proved filling. He pitched me a plastic water bottle afterward. I uncapped and drained the water and still felt thirsty. For a time, I just rested. Finally, I looked up at Baran. He'd been standing still with his eyes unfocused. "Is this what you expected?" I asked. It took him a moment before he regarded me. He didn't have to think about the question, though. He shook his head. "Who built this place?" I asked. "Any ideas?"
"I always have ideas," he said. "In this case, I cannot accept the ideas. The size of the cavern, if that's even the correct name, awes me."
"Do you know how big it is?"
"Not precisely," he said. "By what my senses tell me, I'd estimate it is almost as large as the state of Utah."
I stared at him in disbelief. "Utah?" He nodded. "There's a space down here under the earth the size of Utah?"
"Not the exact shape," Baran said. "But an overall extent, I believe so, yes."
I blinked and blinked, more dazed the longer I thought about it. "The size of Utah? That couldn't be right." "Is this natural?" I asked.
"Explain your question."
Was this underworld here, or did someone build it and then stick in the machine?
I am inclined to believe the second explanation,
Baran said. That someone carved out an underground area the size of Utah this far down?
It is a remarkable engineering feat,
Baran said. That's crazy.
Maybe not,
Baran said softly. I put my head back against the damp rock and tried to envision anyone carving out such an area this deep under the earth. It was mind-boggling, to say the least.
One of the many interesting aspects of the area is where it is not,
Baran said. What do you mean?
The cavern is only under one major human metropolitan area.
Yeah? Where? Las Vegas? Baran's eyebrows rose.
That is a good guess. How did you arrive at the correct conclusion?
I shrugged. Las Vegas is a one-of-a-kind town. It has a dubious history to boot. It only makes sense that of all the cities, it's the one that would be linked to this place.
You do not think those things have any bearing on this underworld?
Heck, I said. How should I know? I paused before asking, do you think the Polarians made this place?
Normally, I would say yes. However, the machinery back there, it does not seem Polarian in nature.
Thank you, I said.
For what?
He asked. That's just an expression. I was thinking the same thing before. That you came to the same conclusion made me say thanks.
How quaint,
he said. Ain't it just, I replied. He cocked his head. At first, I thought it was in reference to my comment. Then I heard something, too. It had a strange but seemingly familiar whine. What is that? I asked. Baran barked an order. All the Tosks scrambled to their feet. They aimed their carbines into the darkness.
I think that is,
Baran said. Before he could finish his thought, I vanished. Chapter 35. I staggered as I materialized in the piloting chamber of a craft of some kind. It took a second before I realized what had happened. I was back in my good old guard ship. Rax, I shouted, seeing the metal-sheathed crystal standing in his slot on the dash. Then I realized that someone was sitting in my piloting chair. It was Jenna Jones of the CAU with a pair of dark goggles over her eyes. How could she see out of those things? What's going on? I shouted.
Shut up, Jenna told me. I have to concentrate. This might not work, but it's likely the best chance we're going to get.
I glanced outside the port window. I'm not sure, but I must have expected to see the deep blue sea. I did not see that. I saw darkness, glimpses of rock wall, and flickering lights about 50 feet down and maybe a quarter mile distant. Are we in the giant cavern? I asked.
I told you to shut up,
Jenna snarled. She manipulated the controls. The guard ship lurched, going lower. Take it easy with my ship, I said. Jenna aimed her goggled face at me with anger lines on her forehead before she looked away and seemed to concentrate once more. I wondered if those were VR goggles, and if so, why Rax hadn't told me about them before. Then it struck me what Jenna was doing. Tosks, I said. You're going to laser the Tosks. Even as I said that, Jenna pulled the trigger to the laser cannons located on the stubby wings of the guard ship. I whipped around to stare out of the port window. Lasers burned brightly, stabbing Tosks who aimed their beam carbines at us. Some of the green beams fired, striking the armor of the guard ship. I felt sick seeing the Tosks going down. The lasers burned each one in a microsecond. I'd been with those Tosks, had sweated and hurt with them coming down into the Utah-sized underworld. I didn't like seeing them curl and burn like sizzled bugs in a zapper.
Where is he?
Jenna shouted.
He was there a second ago.
Do you mean Baran? I asked.
Yes, yes, the Antares Domini,
Jenna said.
The one who destroyed CAU.
I thought about the director at the moon base. I thought about all the CAU people at the Saturn station. Jenna had a reason to be angry. And yet, was this the best strategy? Maybe we ought to capture Baran, I said. Jenna ignored me as she seemed to be studying something with her goggles. I moved closer to the port window. I saw a flicker of blue in the distance. I hesitated, and suddenly saw a red glowing blot or missile launch from the blue that had to be Baran and his Nimbus. The red glow didn't seem good. Jenna, I warned. She cursed, didn't give me any warning, and banked the guard ship so it swerved hard to the side. Afterburners kicked in, making the ship move. That threw me against a panel. I crashed hard, barely avoided a head injury, and slid along the floor. At the last second, I grabbed a piece of equipment and curled myself around it, hanging on tight. Something struck the guard ship, shaking the craft. Sparks flew from a panel as something there sizzled. The ship lurched again.
"Hang on!"
Jenna shouted. The next few seconds were crazy. We skidded along the rock surface of the underworld. It created a terrible din inside the ship. Another red broadside struck us, and the lights wavered in the piloting chamber.
"What's he firing at us?"
Jenna shouted. "Rax," I said. "Move us. Save the ship."
"Logan,"
the crystal said,
"I am sorry to inform you that Jenna Jones now occupies the leadership position."
"You little bastard," I said, interrupting him. "Move us now or the guard ship is toast. I know what I'm talking about." 3 tense seconds passed.
"We are making a phase shift,"
the crystal said.
"You can't do that,"
Jenna told him.
"You know what's at stake."
I looked up out of the port window and saw another red glow come streaking toward the ship. "Now, Rax, now, before it's too late." At that instant, the ship phased, transferred, teleported, call it what you want. It only took an instant of time. We vanished from the location, avoiding the latest red glowing energy missile that I had no idea how Baran created. The guard ship appeared elsewhere in the underworld. I knew because it was dark outside except for a region of grim machinery. I sat up as I heaved a sigh of relief. Jenna twisted her head one way and another.
"Rax,"
she said in an accusing tone.
"We have phased out of danger,"
Rax said. Jenna tore off the dark-tinted goggles. I expected anger, especially because of the way she just said Rax's name. Instead, I saw fear shining in her eyes.
"Thanks a lot, Logan,"
she said.
"You might have just ended the human race."
I laughed. "Come on. You can't be serious. We're alive because of my quick thinking."
"You have no idea of the stakes involved."
"You do?"
"Yes."
"I'm listening," I said.
"Rax?"
Jenna asked.
"I am unsure,"
the crystal said. "Wait a minute," I said, glancing from Rax to Jenna. It seemed as if she was asking the crystal's permission to tell me what was going on, and he was hesitating. "What's going on here, Rax? Have you changed loyalties?"
"Not exactly,"
the crystal said, seeming to hedge his answer.
"My first loyalty is to my oath. I belong to the Galactic Guard. I live to enforce galactic law and apprehend galactic civilization criminals."
"What does that have to do with anything?" I asked.
"You have aided a galactic civilization criminal, Logan."
"You mean Baran?"
"I do,"
Rax said. "I haven't aided him, you idiot. He made me a prisoner."
"Logan,"
Rax said,
"we know you showed the Antaran the hidden key to the deep entrance hatch. Before that, you helped him escape Kaz's assassination attempt."
"No, no, no," I said. "You have it backwards. Baran paralyzed me. Kaz tried to save my life. And besides, that wasn't Kaz. It was a clone of Kaz."
"How do you know that?"
Rax asked. "You guys think I've thrown in with Baran?" I said.
"Without your aid,"
Rax began. "Baran drugged me," I shouted. "Why did you just snatch me away from him if you think I'm in league with him?" Rax did not reply.
"We wanted answers,"
Jenna finally said. "You were going to interrogate me?" I asked in disbelief. Jenna looked away. "I can't believe this," I said, shaking my head. "Baran has Debbie. He has the director and a bunch of CAU people."
"We know all this,"
Rax said. "Yeah, well, I don't know how the guard ship is up and running. The last I remember, the ship had critically flooded compartments and was stranded in the ocean. I sure don't know why Jenna said I helped screw up humanity's last chance for survival. I don't understand this place." I waved an arm. "This underworld is crazy. The machines... what are these machines? What do they do? Who built them?" I took a deep breath, another, and then a third, holding it and only slowly letting my air back out. In a quieter voice, I asked, "What's going on? Is Argon behind all this?"
"You told me before that Argon died,"
Jenna said. "I said I don't know if he did." "Rax," I said, "have you been subtly modifying me all this time? Baran said you have been."
"I did not know about the underworld until only a short time ago,"
Rax said, indirectly answering my question with his avoidance.
"However, that is not germane to the direct threat. But Arn seeks the ancient portal to the Polarian Paradise, does he not?
Okay, that's interesting, I said. So the portal is real, huh?
It is all too real,
Rax said. I nodded. And the Chrono Warp can help open the portal?
Oh, yes,
Rax said.
Fortunately, Kaz, the original Kaz, stole the Chrono Warp and destroyed it.
Well, that's great, I said. So what's the problem, then?
Quite simply this,
Rax said.
We believe that it will only be a matter of time before Baran or his colleagues manage to construct another Chrono Warp.
I thought you had to be a super genius Polarian to make something like that.
Yes,
Rax said. Several seconds passed as that sank in. I'd always thought Baran had been a boaster concerning the excellence of the Antares Institute, but this implied... So you're telling me that Baran is in the Polarian category? I asked.
Oh, yes,
Rax said.
You saw what just transpired. Baran almost destroyed the guardship while proving impervious to our laser cannons. He's also made many uncanny guesses and seems to be on the verge of opening the Polarian portal.
Once he makes his own Chrono Warp, that is.
With the greater knowledge he can gain from this place, the manufacturing of a Chrono Warp will likely occur soon.
Okay, I said. And why exactly would his opening the portal destroy humanity? Neither Jenna nor Rax spoke. That made me angry. If you still think I'm a traitor to the cause...
No,
Rax said, interrupting.
I tested your truthfulness earlier while accusing you. I believe your story about Baran drugging you. Besides, there are still traces of the drug in your system. Jenna, could you please leave the piloting chamber?
Are you kidding me?
Jenna said.
I'm afraid you are not rated for the latest intelligence briefing,
Rax told her.
And he is?
Jenna asked, pointing at me.
Not precisely,
Rax said.
However, Baran has proven even deadlier than I anticipated.
What were you going to say?
Jenna asked.
Jenna, humanity is at stake,
Rax said.
Just as importantly, the galaxy is in dreadful danger. Logan and I are the guard agents on the spot. We must stop this galactic catastrophe and time is running out.
I don't like this,
she said.
Did you or did you not tell me that I was the best person to run the guard ship?
Please, Jenna,
Rax said.
I told you that in strictest confidence. Now I understand and sympathize with your feelings, but this is for the best.
I thought Jenna was going to explode. In the end, she got out of my piloting chair and angrily strode out of the chamber, closing the hatch behind her. If she was trying to slam the hatch, she failed, although it closed a little louder than usual. Thanks a lot, I said. She's a better galactic guard agent than me.
In terms of piloting the guard ship,
Rax said,
Jenna is less reckless than you are.
Yeah, but...
Logan, time is ticking. We can talk about what I told Jenna later. Right now, I must check with Sand.
Sand? Check with him for what? I said. Rax had already fallen silent. Thus, I stood in the piloting chamber waiting to find out what was really going on. Chapter 36 10 minutes later, while following Rax's instructions and still unenlightened regarding Sand, I piloted the guard ship through the darkness of the Utah-sized cavern. The outline and extent of the machinery down there changed, growing larger and more complex. Even though we were behind armored plating, the thrum and throb of the machine shook my chair and the entire ship.
You must land,
Rax informed me.
We dare not take the guard ship any farther.
How about telling me what's going on? I said. I'm getting sick of the suspense. I mean, if I'm going to know...
You must understand,
Rax said, interrupting,
that I'm in constant contact with Sand. He does not want you to see him. He does not believe you are sufficiently civilized or trustworthy enough to know the terrible secret.
Yeah? I asked.
Sand has debated destroying the guard ship and the three of us to keep the terrible secret intact. It is only the fact that he doubts he can slay Lord Baran and his confederates on his own that is causing him hesitation.
That's just wonderful, I said. He wants our help, but only because he's in trouble. This sounds like a bastard who will bite the hand that feeds him and turn over the guard ship to another in a heartbeat.
If you are referring to me...
Yes, I said.
Let us stick to the issue at hand,
Rax said several seconds later.
San's secret is terrible and all-encompassing. He is...
Yeah, yeah, I said. So what does Jenna know about this Sand fella?
Jenna knows nothing about him.
I have told her this is a matter of human extinction, and she is satisfied with that.
You're kidding me, I said. She didn't ask for specifics?
Jenna is a good agent. She knows how to take orders, even orders that she doesn't understand.
Well, I'm not good at that.
I know. It is one of your key failings.
No, it's one of my major strengths.
If you believe this...
Forget it, I said, cutting Rack short. I've had my fill of debates while working with Baran.
So you were in collusion with him,
Rack said.
That modifies my previous...
Come on, I said, interrupting. Give me a break. That was just a bad choice of words on my part. Baran's screwed with my mind. You think I'm gonna side with him?
Knowing your character, no,
Rack said. I landed the guardship onto the rocky bottom of the underworld. All around us was the black machinery constantly working, shaking, and throbbing. I've been wondering, I said, how long have these machines been in operation?
Something on the order of 6,000 years,
Rax replied. Without stopping? I asked, incredulous.
Oh yes,
Rax said.
If they had stopped.
What happens then? The end of the world?
I have said too much,
Rax told me.
Sand? Ah. I believe I have finally found the right argument with him. Please, Logan, I must use my entire focus to speak with Sand. This could take some time.
How long is that? Rax didn't answer. I sat in my piloting chair, wondering what Baran was doing now. Had we slain all the Tosks? I still felt bad about the shootings earlier. I didn't see how the Polarian portal could cause the end of the world or pose a dire threat to all of galactic civilization. I kind of doubted the machines had been down here for 6,000 years. That didn't make sense. I mean, machines ran down all the time as entropy took over, causing things to fail. Did Sand keep everything running by oiling the gears, replacing worn-out parts? I put my hands over my chest, settled back, and soon a great weariness came crashing down. I must have dozed off and begun to dream. I was on the ladder again, climbing.
Logan, wake up.
I blinked in my chair, raised my head, and realized I was safe in the guard ship. Yeah? I asked.
Sand has agreed to see you,
Rax said from the dash.
He is unhappy with the event, but he believes he needs one resourceful human to understand the full story. Our time is limited. Baran is already summoning reinforcements from space, from the region around Saturn. There is a possibility the Antaran will directly attack the machine. If the great machine should stop...
Right, right, planet-wide calamity, I said. Got it. I'm ready to see your guy.
Good,
Rax said.
We are transferring now.
The transfer seemed to take longer. How would I know? That's a good question. I shouldn't have been able to tell. I dropped onto a hard surface, having appeared an inch above it. I staggered forward, barely able to regain my balance and avoid sprawling onto the ground. I heard Rax clatter against the floor. Steel flooring by the noise. That was the poorest teleportation I'd ever experienced. I scooped Rax up, put him in my back pocket, and looked around. I was in a large, empty room, entirely steel in construction, filled with stale air. What the heck, Rax? Where is this place? The crystal did not answer. Rax? I asked. The stale air was starting to get to me. I took several deep breaths and then took another. That did nothing to ease me. I began to realize this place had almost no breathable air. Hey, I said. Sand, can you hear me? I heard nothing but a distant throb of noise. Kneeling, I felt the slightest tremor in the floor. Breathing deeper than ever, I tried to suck whatever oxygen was in the air. The room seemed to spin, to rotate. I was obviously about to pass out, maybe die in here. I laid down because if I survived, I didn't relish collapsing and breaking bones. Then everything went blank. Chapter 37. A roaring sound seemed to surround me. Was this another dream, or was I inside the great machine? I inhaled, tasting the sweetness of breathable air. Then a sharp throb of a headache made me wince. I suddenly felt horrible, vomited, breathed, and vomited again. I felt more horrible than ever. Maybe that's because I'd passed out due to a lack of oxygen. At least I was still alive. At least... A furnace-like roar increased in volume as I lay there. It seemed like an angry sound. I had the sense that the furnace might rise up and that would be the end of me. I found the strength, therefore, to pry open my eyes. What I saw confounded me to such a degree that I sat right up. That might have been a mistake. Dizziness clutched me. My eyesight blurred, and a nauseous feeling made the vomit rise in the back of my throat. By force of will, I kept what remained of my food down. I kept staring, massaged my throbbing head, and finally received my reward. I saw a metal head tower over me. It was 3, maybe 4 stories tall. Giant rivets showed everywhere on the metal head. Its eyes were great flames at either end of a horizontal pit. It lacked nostrils, and the mouth, it was a great robotic mouth with titanium for teeth. Fire burned back behind what resembled a tongue. I realized the lips moved. The otherwise primitive robot head had molten metal lips that constantly reformed as the head spoke. Here was the source of the furnace-like roar I'd heard earlier. The head spoke, but the words made no sense. I massaged my still-aching head again, leaned toward the thing, and concentrated the best I could. The head spoke once again, and this time I could make out the words.
"Are you the Galactic Guard Agent Logan?"
the head asked. "That's me," I said.
"Speak up so I can hear you,"
the head said. "Yes," I shouted. "I'm Logan. Who are you?" The head closed his mouth. The eyelid shut with a faint clanging sound before opening again. In that swift interim, I looked around. Hills of gems surrounded me. There were individual hills of diamonds, rubies, onyxes, and more. The fortune in precious gems was staggering. I also saw crude robots. They were bronze-colored, had rivets holding them together, and held what appeared to be broad-bladed shovels in their metal mitten-like hands. The robots were 9 feet tall or thereabouts. Each must have weighed a ton. The towering head opened his mouth, and the fires behind the molten metal tongue seemed dimmer than before. Several of the robots, moving in an exaggeratedly mechanical manner, approached hills of gems. One thrust his shovel into diamonds, another into rubies, and others into emeralds and sapphires and onyxes. Clanking as they moved, the robots approached the huge metal head and hurled the gems into the cavernous mouth like old train men hurling coal into the maw of a locomotive's furnace. The giant head chewed the gems, crunching and crushing them, swallowing the mass. Now the fire behind the molten metal tongue once more roared with great strength. I had a brief suspicion that I was hallucinating. I pinched myself and yelped at the pain. The head regarded me again as the robots shuffled to their respective gem mountains.
"I am sand,"
the giant metal head said. "Rax spoke to you earlier?" I asked.
"He did indeed."
"Where is Rax?" I asked.
"He does not need to hear this,"
Sand told me in his furnace-like voice. "Are you going to kill me?" I asked.
"I have not yet decided."
I nodded as if that made sense. The huge metal head, the robots, the gem hills, and the fantastic underworld machine had begun to have an effect upon me. This all felt surreal. It was difficult to take it seriously. I mean, the other things, like the moon base, had seemed easier to accept. Maybe it was the crudeness of all these things that made it so difficult.
"I am sand,"
the great metal head said again.
"I am the guardian of life. I am the sentinel who never sleeps. I never desert my post because I cannot move. I feed on the wealth of the world. I oversee the Grithys in their tasks."
"Would you hold it right there, Mr. Sand?" I said. "Did you say Grithys?"
"I am just sand. I accept no titles except for the ones given me at my construction."
Okay.
"Yes, I did say Grithys. I find it strange that you seem to know about them."
"There were Grithys in the lowest underground Greenland cavern. Don't you know about that?"
"Ah,"
Sand said in a louder, furnace-like voice.
"I did not. I see that I must speak to Argon once more. He has been withholding information again. That shall not stand."
"Wait a minute," I said. "Argon is alive?"
"Do you wish to see him?"
Sand asked. "Heck yes," I said.
Remember that you said you wished for this.
I nodded. I knew very well what I'd said. Still, I didn't like San's warning. It seemed ominous. Soon, I heard a scraping sound. I turned and my mouth dropped open in shock and horror. 10 or more of the big robots pushed a gigantic clear cylinder toward me. In the fluid-filled cylinder was machinery, some of which caused constant bubbles to rise like those in an aquarium. A mangled mess of a body floated in the blue solution. The mangled, man-shaped thing lacked a left arm and most of his right leg. He wore a skin-tight suit around the rest of him and a full mask around his face. A tube snaked from the mask to an oxygen supplier, I supposed. San spoke. The robot stopped, and I stared at the floating, mangled mess in the huge tube. "That's Argon?" I asked.
"You are correct,"
San said. "Can he hear me?"
"No, he cannot hear you,"
San said in his ponderous way. "Is he alive?"
"He breathes. He thinks at times, and he answers a few of my questions. I assure you, Argon will answer more."
"So, how did he get this way?"
"He barely escaped the destruction of his Greenland base when he fought the space pirates. My agents discovered his dying form. The Grithys fashioned the cylinder and the machines to keep him alive. I have probed Argon for a time. I learned more, but not enough. Never enough."
"Can I talk to Argon?" I asked. Sand spoke. The huge robots clanked around to the other side. Slowly, working in unison, the robots shoved the cylinder away and soon out of sight. "I guess that means no," I said.
"You are correct,"
Sand said.
"Argon does not need to speak to anyone but me. Otherwise, he might turn stubborn again. That I will not allow."
I wanted to ask Sand if he tortured Argon, but he clearly did. I didn't want a confirmation just yet. I wanted to hear Sand's story, and I wanted to survive the meeting. "Mr. Sand," I said loudly. "Excuse me, please. I mean Sand." The giant robot head waited. "I belong to the Galactic Guard," I began.
"I know this."
"Sure you do. I'm just stating facts."
"I have already warned you that time is short. We must do this swiftly."
I nodded. "Lord Baran of the Antares Institute captured me."
"Galactic Guard agent,"
Sand said, interrupting.
"Let us get to the point. Long ago, the Polarians came to Earth and built a portal. They did it in their time of power and brilliance. They found the weak rips in reality here and set up a station. The greatest of the Polarians broke through. He returned, taking more of his ilk with him. A female Polarian came back and spawned a child. That child grew up and created the Star Corps. I have been informed that you know the story of the Star Corps."
"That's right. I destroyed the Star Corps."
"This I know,"
Sand said.
"It is one of the primary reasons I have taken you into my confidence. The female Polarian that had returned from Paradise, as the Polarians named that realm, was not like the others of her kind. She had radically changed before she died."
"How did she die?" I asked.
"Do not interrupt me, guard agent. Our time is very short. She died. That is the critical thing. Her son lived, and he created a terrible danger with the Star Corps. One other Polarian returned from Paradise. He was half mad. He spoke of wonders, marvels, and the continuing changes to the Polarians on the other side. He created this underworld, these machines, and he built me."
"Sand," I said, "please excuse me for interrupting, but this place doesn't seem like something a Polarian would make."
"You are correct in your assessment, Agent Logan. As I said, the returning Polarian was half mad. He spoke of the terrors of paradise, the things that had twisted the Polarians and were twisting them still. For the Polarians had not gone to a fair realm, but to a terror realm of sinister intelligences.
I shook my head. Sand seemed to be contradicting himself.
The half-mad Polarian labored long on the pristine Earth, using Grithys and other mysterious powers to fashion the great machine. He caused mighty shafts to sink down into the planetary core. The core heat powers the great machine, and ever the machine works to create the energy that keeps the Polarian portal sealed from this side.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? The fires in San's eyes grew, perhaps showing his anger at my having spoken again.
What is it this time?
He intoned. I thought you, or whoever, needed a chronowarp to use the portal.
That is a statement, not a question,
Sand said.
However, that will suffice to get to the point. Yes, from this side one would need a chronowarp to help twist the fabric of reality at the portal point in what is now Antarctica. The only chronowarp on Earth has been destroyed. Yet, it has come to my attention that Lord Baran the Antaran has the genius to create another chronowarp.
Wait, I said. If there isn't a chronowarp...
Surely you are not that dense,
Sand said, interrupting me.
I control the great machine. I am the guardian of life that keeps the robots at their task. The great machine has but one purpose. I would think it obvious by now.
Why don't you go ahead and spell it out for me?
The great machine was built to seal the portal from this end. We must never allow the terrible powers that the Polarians have become to return to this realm of existence. The great machine protects this universe from invasion. I stand guard day and night. As long as the machine runs, the Earth is safe. The galaxy is safe. But if ever the great machine stops, that could well be the end of everything, as the insane but all too powerful entities would wreak havoc upon the weaklings here.
This is really on the level? I asked.
This is why the Galactic Guard has quarantined the Earth, the entire solar system, from the rest of galactic civilization.
What about Argon? I asked.
I take that to mean, why do I keep Argon alive if he is so potentially dangerous? The answer is simple. Argon never went to the paradise on the other side of reality. Argon is one of the ancient Polarians who had the wisdom to refrain from crossing over. I believe the half-mad altered Polarian put Argon and his kind in the stasis tubes in Greenland. Why the madman did this, I have never satisfactorily decided. As you might have surmised, if you had enough intelligence, the madman created the embryo of the Galactic Guard that has morphed into what it is today.
You've spoken to Galactic Guardsmen?
No, but I have monitored the Guardsmen that landed on Earth. As an aside, I am the one who caused Rax's original Guard agent to die. The crystal does not know that. If Rax does learn of the deed, I will have to destroy him.
Sure, I said. So why did you have to kill the agent? I asked, remembering the skeleton in the guard ship when I'd first found it. The skeleton that had a monkey-like skeletal tail.
Rax's original guard agent had learned of the portal and wished to open it. I believe the idea of unlimited power had corrupted him.
Why don't you think the idea will corrupt me?
I have studied you as we speak, Agent Logan. I have also watched you from afar. You have impressed me. You are a rare individual of grit and honor. I have, in fact, summoned a guard ship to aid us.
But I thought you said you don't speak to the Galactic Guard.
Of course, I used an intermediary in order to keep my identity secret.
Oh, I said. So a guard ship is coming. Why do you need me, then?
Clearly, the guard ship has not yet arrived. In fact, it may not come in time. That means you must stop Lord Baran and his confederates before they manufacture a chronowarp and open the portal.
How close are they to doing that?
Baran is even now summoning his teleporting craft. I can only conclude that the purpose of this is to take him away to rearm for the next phase of the fight.
Baran is highly modified, I said. He happens to have the full use of his brain.
He is an Antaran Domini of the Institute,
Sand said.
I know he is uniquely dangerous. You must kill him, Agent Logan. You must kill his confederates on the Saturn station.
And how am I supposed to do that? I asked. If my guard ship's lasers couldn't pierce Baran's force field, I doubt I have a powerful enough gun.
I have a dagger from the other realm,
Sand said. Wait a minute, I said, holding up my hands. By other realm, you mean what? The so-called Polarian Paradise?
That is correct.
And stuff is different there than from over here?
Some stuff, as you say, from that realm, has queer properties here. The substance is unlike anything known in this universe. I do not believe that Baran's force field will resist the otherworldly substance.
Do not believe doesn't sound the same as the force field won't resist the substance.
That is correct,
Sand said.
There is a large margin for error in this assassination attempt.
I didn't like the sound of that. Surely the guard ship, the big one coming, will have energy weapons that could vaporize Baran, I said.
If it is a guard dreadnought, then yes, it will possess such main weaponry. But that dreadnought is not here. You are. Time is limited. Baran's force field is unique, and we must stop him before he succeeds.
What if we stranded Baran in space, in a vacuum? Would that kill him?
That would be sufficient to kill him. But Baran is resistant to any teleportation not of his design.
I remember silvery disks down in the Greenland Cavern teleporting him.
Perhaps that is so,
Sand said.
But Baran would have allowed that to happen.
And after I kill Baran and his confederates, I asked.
Then you will return the otherworldly knife to me for safekeeping. It has a terrible property that only I have been able to suppress.
Okay, what does that mean?
You will not want to wield this knife for long.
How come? I asked.
Because it will destroy you after a time,
Sand said.
It will disrupt your atoms and you will simply cease to exist.
So, I said, what will the knife do to those near me?
The same,
Sand said. Does this side effect have a range?
Several hundred miles,
Sand said. This knife has some seriously bad mojo.
In truth, the substance does not exist in the same manner that we do. It has grim properties. I have kept the knife because I have no way yet of getting rid of it. Keeping the knife from destroying the earth is one of my many duties.
This might sound crazy, I said, but if the portal is that dangerous, why haven't you destroyed the earth and thereby destroyed the portal?
Have you not listened to me?
Sand asked.
The portal has nothing to do with the planet, other than occupying the same space, as it were. If anyone destroyed the Earth, he would destroy the portal, but not the rip in reality. He would have destroyed the great machine and me, though. Then the things on the other side could come through once they built a portal of their own, which I'm sure they could do with ease.
Scratch that idea, I muttered, too low for Sand to hear. Okay, I said more loudly. If they can build portals, why don't they build a different portal to Earth now and finish us off?
That is an intelligent question,
Sand said, almost sounding surprised.
I don't believe any other rip in reality on Earth leads to that dimension. If they have other rips over there, I suppose they must lead to other realms of existence. I have no idea if they have or have not attempted that. I am moderately certain they desire to return here, although I am not exactly sure why.
Maybe to show off, I said.
That might be so,
Sand said.
Or perhaps this is one of the few realities where they would be akin to gods compared to the rest of you.
That was a sobering thought. I also wondered why Sand hadn't included himself in that little comparison. Several of the bronze robots reappeared. This time, they dragged a large granite cube, maybe 10 feet high and wide and deep. It took 12 of them to drag the ponderous thing. I noticed a lock in the center of the side facing us. The last robot carried what must have been the key.
Are you ready to carry out the task?
Sand asked me. Do you have any suggestions about how to get Baran?
Locate his position, teleport beside him, and stab hard.
You make it sound easy.
I doubt it will be,
Sand said.
There is another thing we must discuss before you begin. I expect you must realize by now the seriousness of my existence.
Of course, I said.
You speak too flippantly. You do not realize. I have remained hidden for many cycles of time, and I intend to remain so. The reasoning is obvious. If no one knows about me or the great machine, they will not plot to destroy me or the machine. In that way, the blockage to the terrible portal remains in place.
I can see that, I said slowly.
Thus, once the mission is completed, Rax, Jenna, and yourself must be eliminated. It is the only way to ensure that the secret of me and the machine remains one.
Oh, I said.
I want your word that after eliminating Lord Baran and his confederates, you will return down here with Rax and Jenna.
So that you can, what, kill us? I asked.
I do not need to kill you personally. My robots or the Grithys can do the deed. Or if you prefer to cease by your own hand, that is fine with me.
You're too generous, I said.
I know you do not mean that. I know you think that it is a harsh sentence, as you will cease to exist.
That's where you're wrong, Sand. It makes obvious sense, as you've said. Of course I understand. Why do you think I became a Galactic Guard agent in the first place? It was to defend my planet. I'm the Earth's Marshal. Thus...
Agent Logan, I sense that you are seeking to deceive me. I know you Earthlings. You desire to live above all else. In fact, I have come to suspect that you view your own life more highly than the rest of the lives on the planet.
That's preposterous, I said.
Your actions say otherwise.
So what are you proposing, then?
You must undergo a quick operation,
Sand said.
It will be relatively painless.
Oh, right, I said. I get it. You want to put a control device in my brain.
That is true. If you will observe the new robots...
I looked around and saw about 20 more of the huge bronze robots dragging what looked like an operating theater with a bed and a buzzsaw, no doubt to open my skull. Is that what you did to Kaz's and the director's clones? I asked.
That is a logical deduction. Yes, you are correct.
How about I just give you my word and we can skip the operation? As you've been saying, time is short.
I'm afraid that is unacceptable,
Sand said. As I stared at the huge metal head, the robots dragged the operating theater closer yet. Chapter 38. Wait a minute, I shouted, holding up my hands. The robots continued to drag the operating theater closer. Sand, I said, we have to talk about this.
The time for talking is over,
the great metalhead said.
Now it is time for action.
I need Rax in order to operate the guard ship.
You will have Rax as soon as the control chip is in your brain.
I resent your distrust, I said.
I suspect that is another lie. You are a cunning creature, Logan, but you have a problem telling the truth when you are under great duress.
I looked around wildly. This was a nightmare. Behind me was a black wall of metal. To the sides of me were the gem mounds. The robots kept dragging stuff in here from a place of deep darkness across from me. Let me at least see the otherworldly knife before you turn me into a mindless slave.
You are mistaken, Logan. The process is nothing like that. The control...